Thank you, Nick. And for our last reader, we have Dr. Dan Weinstein, Associate Professor of English. Dr. Weinstein considers writing to be an integral part of living. He has never in his life killed anything larger than an ant.
Okay, before I read this, I just want to thank Dr. Berry for organizing this event. It's a tremendous pleasure to be doing this with Nick and with Dr. Nelson, and particularly to hear Nick read, which I haven't done before, and I just want to congratulate you for a very fine reading. Maiden Voyage. Good job. So, okay, this is a story that I wrote. And which attempts to combine both juvenile delinquency and the supernatural. It's called In the Woods. A week after his mother had her near-death experience, Robbie was up in the treehouse shooting birds with his slingshot. It was an evil weapon, with a black plastic grip and cool steel arms and a folding stock that fit rigidly over Robbie's slender forearm. With his left hand, Robbie tipped the little door at the base of the slingshot's hollow handle and let a shiny steel ball drop into his palm. He heard the jay twitter outside the window, an aperture 5 feet by 4 cut in the curvy, warped wall of the treehouse. Crouched next to it, he pinched the ball tightly in its pouch, sighted through the wishbone of the slingshot's prongs, fired at the blue jay sitting big as a turkey on the end of the limb, and knocked its beak off. Robbie was disgusted. He'd been aiming for its eye. The blue jay, however, seemed not to know what had happened. It just sat there, beakless, for a moment. Then, its head tilting slightly, it toppled from the limb in shock. Robbie heard the cushy thump when it hit the grass. Very messy, he thought, not professional at all. Whether he wanted to be a big game hunter or an assassin, his aspirations varied depending on his mood. He would have to do better from now on. The rope ladder, a real hemp rope with square knots tied in it every 3 feet, was tied around a spike at one end and disappeared through the square of light in the floor. Knowing what he had to do, Robbie tucked the slingshot into the waistband of his jeans, took hold of the rope, and descended. Now, was it Trotsky he was after, or a lion that had gone to ground? He changed his mind several times on the way down. When his feet touched, he took up his slingshot again and stood over the fallen jay. It looked weird without its beak, like it had a human mouth, open wide as if it were screaming. Only instead of sound, blood came out in a stream that soaked the ground, a purple pillow under the bird's head. The jay breathed rapidly and shivered. Robbie tipped the door of the ammo compartment and felt the weight of the solid ball in his rough rope-rubbed palm. The shot hit the jay in the side of the head and ended its spasmodic shaking. At least he could recover the ball. As he bent over the bird, probing in the ornithic pulp with a twig for his projectile, Johnny Evans and the mouse came marching through the bushes, carrying their BB guns at their shoulders, military style. "What'd you peg?" asked Mouse, bending next to Robbie for a look at his kill. "Blue jay." "Don't look like any blue jay I ever seen. That's because I shot its beak off." "I found it!" cried Johnny, hurrying toward them with an outstretched hand. "There's only half of it, but you can see the little nose holes." "Well, I'll be damned," said Mouse. "That's really something. Want to try and put it back? I mean, maybe backwards or something? We could say we found a mutant." "Not enough head left," said Robbie. "Then What should we do with it? Johnny asked, touching the beak's sharp point experimentally. I don't care, Robbie shrugged. He had retrieved the bullet and was wiping it off on the cuff of his jeans. Shoot it, recommended Mouse. All right. Johnny handed the beak to Robbie, who stood up and placed it in the slingshot's pouch. Where? See if you can get it through the door, said Mouse. Robbie aimed at the dark opening in the belly of the treehouse, pulled and missed. The pointed beak hit wood and shattered. The three boys ducked instinctively. When they straightened again, there was a moment of awed silence. They were always astonished when something disintegrated. Johnny summed up the reaction. Wow, he said. So, where you guys been? Robbie asked, taking hold of the rope ladder and starting to climb. The others slung their guns over their shoulders and followed him up through the hole in the floor. We went down to the beach to shoot crabs, Johnny said. They were all up now, sprawled on the plywood deck. Yeah, said Mouse, there were tons of them. Awesome, Robbie said. The treehouse afforded a comfortable space for the three 12-year-olds. It was sturdy, too, except where the walls were starting to bend, mostly around the window. Robbie's father had built the house 3 years before. Since then, perched at the edge of Robbie's family's land, the treehouse had been the boys' operational headquarters. It was near the beach, but enough in the woods to be out of the way. They had never had a problem with trespassers. Even so, they had set traps. Real, rusty, iron-jawed bear stoppers Robbie had found in his basement in several nearby spots, just to be sure. The only furniture in the treehouse was a black trunk with a Jolly Roger painted on its side, 4 feet long and a bit more than 2 deep, which Robbie now opened, and from which he removed a tin can, a box of matches, and a pack of his mother's Virginia Slims. He dumped out 3 smokes and gave one each to Mouse and Johnny. Then he lit his own and shook out the match. The other boys lit theirs off his. The can was for the butts and ashes. It was their only rule. So began Mouse, leaning out against a corner and leaning against a corner and blowing smoke out in a stream. How's your mom? Yeah, she see any more? Say any more weird stuff? Mouse glared at Johnny, but Robbie ignored him. She's all right, I guess, Robbie said. She's quieted down some, but she says she still has dreams and visions and things. He paused, partly to knock his ashes into the can, partly for dramatic effect. Leaning forward, he said in a whisper, "Last night, before my dad came home, she said she saw him almost get squashed by a truck." "No kidding," Johnny said. Johnny and Mouse were also leaning forward now, long ashes on the ends of their cigarettes. "And when he got home, you'll never guess what he told her. First thing when he got home." "What?" "He said he was driving along Suicide Strip, and this big 18-wheeler almost ran him off the road." "Damn." "You bet." "I'm glad my ma isn't like that," said Johnny, "knowing everything I do all the time." "It's not like she knows everything," Robbie said. "It's just she gets these feelings now, but only about some things." A week before, Robbie's mother had received a near-fatal shock from a Cuisinart. It was an old machine. Robbie heard them say something about faulty insulation. Robbie's father had found her on the kitchen floor and administered CPR. She revived and spent the next 2 days in the hospital under observation. She did not say anything about a bright light or tunnel until they brought her back to the house. Then she told him. She had gone to the edge, she said. She had seen the other side. Robbie and his older sister, Anna, did not know what to make of it. Their father seemed to humor her. He would be heard to mumble something under his breath about the other side, but he did not openly question his wife's story. And a few days later, he had to admit the Suicide Strip premonition, quote-unquote, was not something you could just ignore. "I'm still glad my mom isn't like that," said Johnny. "It's creepy." Robbie leaned back again, relaxing against the wall. "Oh, it's not too bad. She sings a lot more now, and she quit smoking."